Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Avi Haddad, the principal of the Harel School in Israel, discussing what it's like to run a high-quality school that experiences missile attacks regularly, and also exploring the differences between Israeli and American Jews, educational systems, and Jewish identity. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and our Two Jewish maven on Israel, Amir Eden, and our young Shinshiniot, Ron Benicote, and Rotem Rappaport. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. I've been moving offices the last week, which means for me moving many, many, many books. I confess that even in this era of instantaneous electronic communication, I still possess an almost obsessive love for books printed on paper. And moving my rabbinic offices means, essentially, moving a large library of Jewish books of all categories, from novels to art books to history to Torah study to Talmud to Jewish theology to poetry to Kabbalah and mysticism to liturgy and prayer to Yiddish and Hebrew stories to Hebrew grammar, linguistics, Jewish humor to Israel to Jewish music to, well, you get the idea. Although moving all of these books is a huge undertaking and entails a very sore back and some strained muscles, once I begin to open those boxes and place the books in thematic order onto shelves, something magical takes place. It is very much like rediscovering old friends, remembering reading these books and recalling what I was experiencing the first time or the most recent time I read them. There is something really magical about seeing a familiar spine of a book emerge from a cardboard tomb and reassume its proper place in a proper bookcase. Well, no e-reader or iPad or laptop will ever capture that feeling. It's true, when I read now, I am more likely to simply download a book at the Kindle store and read it from my very convenient iPad. It's certainly far preferable when you're traveling, light, instantly available, but somehow the sensation is not at all the same. What is it, Jewish comedian Groucho Marx once said? Outside of a dog, a book is a man's best friend. Inside of a dog, it's too dark to read. In any case, as I unload the many dozens of boxes of books, I'm reminded once again of the fact that we are not only the people of the book, but actually the people of the books, many books, plural. As Ecclesiastes said in the Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible, over 2,300 years ago, of the making of books there is no end. Well, he was right then, and he is so much more right now. Of the making of Jewish books there is clearly no end. May there never be an end to the love and warmth these archaic objects continue to provide. If only I can get all of them onto shelves by the end of 2018. Well, to play us in on this penultimate, that means next to last, Two Jewish show of the secular solar year, here's an upbeat version of the verse from Psalms, Ivdu et Hashem b'simcha, serve God with joy, from Mordechai Shapiro.
Elo, mitur simcha. Ein Shchina shoyra.
That was Ivdu et Hashem Besimcha from Mordechai Shapiro, Serve God with Joy, which is kind of the theme of my new synagogue, come to think of it. Well, when we return on To Jewish, our guest, Avi Haddad, principal of an excellent school in Kiryat Malachi, Israel, will describe what it's like to exist under the rain of missiles fired from Gaza. He'll tell us about that experience and the similarities and differences in Jewish education and Jewish identity between Israel and America, all when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Avi Haddad is the principal of the Harel School in Kiryat Malachi. He's part of a delegation that's been exploring American Jewish and other systems of education and can compare them to his own primary school, we would call it here in America, elementary school, in the south of Israel. Boker Tov and welcome.
Boker Tov and welcome, Rabbi Cohen.
It's such a pleasure.
It's my pleasure also.
So one not so minor difference between your school and some of the schools you've seen, of course, is that your school is located within the zone, very close to the zone of rockets that come from Gaza. Talk a little bit about that experience, how that changes education for your children.
First of all, I want to say that my school is the best school in the world.
Of course.
Of course. We know, we agree about this. Look, if you near the border, this is a problem for us. You know, they're all the time scared that the missiles fell down in my city.
Missiles will land, and they do land sometimes.
This happened in the past, before four years. It's happened, and we have three people died there. It was bad times. And if the people scared, we help them. If they afraid to sleep and they have bad feeling about this, we help them with especially
counselors, right?
Counselor, yes. Yeah.
So it's not something that every school has to deal with.
Yes,
thank God. Unfortunately, it is one that you guys deal with.
Yeah,
you've had a pretty good immersion in education systems. What do you think is the best thing about American schools that isn't so true of Israeli schools that you might want to bring back to your school, the best school?
Of course. Today we visit two schools. And yesterday we visit a kindergarten. I have just good things to say about the education school in America. First of all, a professional system. And also professional staff. I see a good behave, clear rules. Today we visit in the high school. They have an option to learn many kind of subjects. And the elementary school, we saw a lot of projects that they learn, and something nice that I saw, they're not running, they just walk.
Right.
Yeah, not running. It's against the, you know, young in the elementary school, all the time they're running.
That's true.
Yes, but in this school, they just walk, and with no yelling, I like it.
I'm telling you, I can hear these rules happening at the Harel school sometime soon.
Look, we have in my school another rules, but If they want to run, let them run. It's yeah. okay. It's okay. Let them run. We have rule. What yes, what no.
I think when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about some of the really extraordinary and innovative programs you have there to encourage character development. When we come back with our guest this morning, Avi Haddad of the Harel School, and we'll be back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a new and newly relocated Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills, is celebrating its first services, classes, and events this winter. Established by a group of passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is dedicated to create a vibrant community that strives every day to serve God with joy. As a new progressive congregation in the foothills and the northwest region of Tucson, Beit Simcha is open to all throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming in northwest Tucson and the Catalina foothills. We are thrilled to announce Beit Simcha has a new interim home for the next, oh, perhaps 6 months, at 3001 East Skyline Boulevard on the northeast corner of Skyline and Campbell, just across from La Encantada. Services, classes, events are all being held here this winter and into the spring. Join us Friday night at Skyline and Campbell for Shabbat services at 6:30 p.m. or Saturday morning at 9 a.m. For more information about Congregation Beit Simcha, to attend services, Adult Education Academy courses, and religious school, go to www.beitsimchatucson.org, BEITSIMCHA, Tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675, or go to beitsimchatucson.org. Join me in the newest Jewish community in southern Arizona at its exciting beginning. If you have a comment, question, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at toojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's toojewishradio18@gmail. Or visit our website at toojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website. Streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store is very popular Jewish podcast, top 10 in America, according to Moment magazine. We welcome our maven on Israel, Amir Eden, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Amir.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
So, Jewish identity is different in Israel and America. And recently we had a group of visitors, wonderful group of Israeli principals come of schools in...
Classroom teachers as well.
Southern region, right. And talked about, and it was a very interesting exchange about what, not just about educational techniques from Israel and America, but about what it means to be Jewish. We think we have to learn a lot from Israelis. Israelis can learn some things from us too, right?
First of all, of course, I mean, we learn from each other in any field, not just Jewish identity. But I agree with you that, you know, when I grew up in Israel, it was kind of simple, black and white. You know, either you're a secular or you're an Orthodox, you know, right. 70s, 80s, you know. And then a little bit of conservative, a little bit of reform, but not really strong in Israel. And then myself, I grew up in a family that my parents didn't observe. So there was no Shabbat and Shabbat dinner and Kabbalat Shabbat or Avdalah. There was nothing in my house. And when I came to the States, I realized, like many Israelis that come to the States, especially when they have children, is that Judaism is all around you in Israel, but here you have to work hard to be a Jew, you know, a Jew of choice. So if it's kosher, it's not everywhere. You have to seek for it, right? And anything else, education, Jewish education, of course. And if you're not in a neighborhood that you have a synagogue in the neighborhood, you have to seek. So all those differences are amazing when you actually talk with Israelis. And I'll tell you what, Israelis look at Americans, many Americans, generally speaking, that they like turn on their Judaism and turn off the Judaism. That's the expression.
Well, there is some truth to that.
Right? So either not going to synagogue at all and, oh, high holidays, you know.
Better go for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
Right, right. Right. Yeah, so I got to say that a lot of Israelis really appreciate when they see the hard work and the effort of, you know, either community or individuals to remain Jewish. And obviously the challenge that we have here as a community, and I share that too, is you know, 70% And that's the number I was given, you know, of Jews married non-Jews. So that's, you look at the future, and it's complex. It's not that easy.
It's not. It's fascinating. I think always has interested in me, very interesting to me, that Israelis who consider themselves chiloni, that is totally secular, they know Tanakh, they know the Hebrew Bible because they learn it in school, whether they learn it as literature or they learn it as history. They know, of course, the geography of Israel. They
and
know
history.
Know the history. They
well,
know.
They don't master is the Siddur.
Yeah, they don't know too much about Jewish prayer, I must say.
I know,
say.
They don't, right.
They come into a Beit Knesset, a synagogue, and they look around. They
they don't know what to do. It's new to them.
They know less than some of the non-Jewish visitors who have been to a few bar mitzvahs. It's very interesting.
That's true. So anyway, when you speak about Israel, you know, obviously we have millions. So we have those who are Orthodox, and we have those who are conservative, and there are those... We're not. I mean, it all depends on where you come from, your own family, neighborhood, you know, circle of friends.
Very interesting question. We'll keep exploring it. Thanks so much, Amir.
You're welcome.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You are finalizing the details of a trip that won't take place for about 6 months, in which you're leading a group to Spain and Morocco, fascinating Jewish places. There's a interesting story that we've been following here on Too Jewish, and many other Jews have been following, about the possibility of returning and claiming citizenship in Spain if you have Sephardic heritage. It's a interesting story, a little weird, and definitely a little complicated.
Right. Well, in fact, one of the participants in this trip, who is a former student of mine long ago at the University of Arizona, is such a person. Her family was expelled from Spain.
In 1492, probably.
Probably, or maybe even earlier, who knows. They moved all around. Both her first name and her family name sound more French than Spanish, but she knows her lineage and has a detailed oral history and is midway through the process of acquiring a Spanish passport. Now, much to her advantage, she spent a year abroad studying in Spain. She's absolutely fluent in Spanish, and she is not one to let bureaucratic details deter her. So among the things she has to do, she has to pass a fluency test in oral Spanish, which will be a piece of cake for her, at a separate facility, and there's a limited number of places you can do this in the U.S., she has to pass an exam on Spanish citizenship, which is sort of like the exam that people wanting to become naturalized citizens of the United States have to take on the Constitution, American history, the fundamentals of American law, et cetera. So this is the same thing, but about Spain. And there's a couple other steps. She needs a Spanish lawyer in the process. There's a number of designated lawyers in Spain, so this is probably their bread and butter. But she decided to join this trip, although she's been to all the cities we're going to visit in Spain, which are Granada, Sevilla, and Cordoba. She hasn't seen the Alhambra, which she's interested in seeing, but she's dying to see the two places we're going to go in Morocco. And the Jewish history in those places is closely related to the Jewish history of Spain, and particularly of the region in which we'll be, which is Andalusia. The region that gave birth to people like Maimonides and Yehuda Halevi and Chasdai ibn Shaprut and, you know, dozens of illustrious names.
Great names, great minds, great writers, poets.
Poets, scholars, rabbis, physicians, interpreters of the law. Right. And so...
Philosophers.
Many of them lived in Cordoba, which was the capital of Sfarad, and... many of them participated in senior positions in the governing of the province of Al-Andalus, modern Andalusia. So we'll visit these places, a very rich Jewish history in Spain, but we will have first visited two cities in Morocco, which I guess I should talk about in next week's show.
We will do so. Thanks so much, Tom. We'll talk then.
Look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Maury Schwartz is dying. He is with his wife, his daughter, and two sons. He knows the end is near. From his deathbed, he says to them, "Bernie, I want you to take the Beverly Hills house." But his wife objects. Bernie, he needs Beverly Hills. So arrogant. Better leave it to Rachel. Morris sighs and says, and to my daughter Rachel, I leave half my stocks and bonds. His wife pipes up again. Rachel, she knows from business the girl can't add two and two. Better leave them to Bernie. Morris sighs again and continues, to my youngest son Jeremy, I leave my fleet of vintage cars. What? Yells his wife. Three tickets he got just last month speeding. Finally, Morris turns to his wife. Sylvia, he says, who's dying here, me or you? That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Two Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well.
We welcome our Shinshiniot, representatives of the Weintraub Israel Center, Ron Benakot and Rotem Rappaport. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov.
You know, you have to speak English all the time now on your jobs. At home, of course, your native language is Hebrew. In Israel, that's pretty normal. In America, being bilingual is like something amazing. Tell us a little bit about your experience with that here.
So when we first got here, we obviously knew that we were going to have to talk in English. And
talk on the radio in English, too.
That was one of the requirements, actually, of getting into this program. And I just think that we didn't really know how intense it would be. But I'm glad that it's like that because I feel like I can feel my English improves. And when Rotem speaks, I can see it as well. And it's really cool just to have a chance to work a little bit on my English. And, you know, sometimes things happen and it's funny. You know, all those mistakes that happens to us, we just take it as a joke and we laugh about it later.
So we were talking off mic and you were talking about the word ancient.
Yes, I try to say ancient a lot. I try to. And people thought I say like agent or Asian. And people thought I was racist. But
even though you're from Asia.
Yeah, we're Asian. Like
you're Asians. You're from the Middle East. It's yeah, Middle East of Asia.
Yeah, but people thought we were like racist or anything. So I just started saying old because nobody would understand me. And it's just the accent thing. And, you know, we have a lot of grammar mistakes, but people stop correcting us because they know we're Israeli and it's okay.
But Americans make a lot of grammatical mistakes too. Don't kid yourself. In Israel, how common is it for people to speak multiple languages?
Actually, most people speak two or three languages at least, because we have Hebrew, which most of the people speak, and then there's English, where most people want to learn it because it will help them be more like talk to other people worldwide. And there's also Arabic and French and German and Russian, so many other languages, and most people talk two languages. But in America, when I come here and people say, wow, you speak two languages? That's awesome. And everyone gets excited. But in Israel, it's really not special because everyone does it.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, here in Arizona, of course, a lot of people speak Spanish. But not as many as you would think, in fact, considering how close we are to Mexico, many people here speak Spanish. I do remember in Israel, everybody would try to speak to me in English, even if their English was horrible, much worse than yours. And my Hebrew was better than their English. They still wanted to speak to me in English. The fascinating part, I think, about this is it brings us together to be able to speak in another language in a way that I think many Americans don't recognize. But Israelis apparently all understand that.
Yeah, I do think we learn it at school, so we always think that we know it. But when I got here, I realized how much I have to learn. I just think it's because we, in Israel, we came from all those different places around the world.
Right.
The variety of languages and cultures that we have there is really, it's amazing. And it's always nice to hear a different language or to learn a word in a different language. It
makes your life richer.
Yeah, it's
you
fun.
Know, I have to say, Israel is a small country with people living in it from 160 or 70 different countries. Because awesome. Jews from all over the world have come there. Thanks so much. We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
In English, actually.
Yes.
And now a word of Torah. The final Shabbat of the secular year coincides with the reading of a great portion of Torah. It happens to be my personal favorite section, It's Shmot, the beginning of the book of Exodus, because it was my own bar mitzvah portion. As you know, we chant the whole Torah over the course of a year in a synagogue, dividing the reading up into a series of weekly portions that begin with the start of Genesis in the fall and continue through the conclusion of Deuteronomy the following autumn. This portion happened to fall on the day I was born, a Shabbat, and therefore it was the portion I learned from my bar mitzvah 13 years later. And now you would think that since we've had the Torah with us for at least 2.5 millennia, 2,500 years, some would say 3,200 years, no part of the Torah could possibly belong to any one Jew. But when you spend a solid year and more closely studying one section of Torah, as our bar and bat mitzvah kids do, and you do so at 12 years of age, you start to feel like this portion is not only special to you, but it also kind of belongs to you. It becomes your Torah portion, as though you were the first and only Jew ever to come so close to it. Although as a rabbi and cantor I have studied many portions, and have immersed myself in the texts and commentaries of each of the weekly sedras for all those many years since my bar mitzvah, at some level I still feel that Shmot is my portion. There are several reasons for this. First, I really did spend about 2 years studying this section with my father, Rabbi and Cantor Baruch Kohan, and he is an excellent teacher. In the course of that time, I came nearly to memorize the 124 verses in the portion, to know the ins and outs of many of the commentaries on the Parsha. And while all of this happened long time ago, there has been an annual opportunity to review and re-explore my portion of Shmot, since most years I get to chant it in the synagogue. But the most important reason that Shmot has continued to be such a source of interest and inspiration is the text itself of this first portion of the book of Exodus. It's filled with outstanding stories, dramatic and exceptionally important. Shmot begins with the Israelites living well in Egypt. Then a new king arises who knew not Joseph. The people are enslaved, Moses is born, and the incredible tale of slavery, redemption, and freedom begins to play itself out. Nearly from birth, Moses is the most interesting and important person in the Torah, and perhaps in all of world religion. He is courageous, forthright, hot-tempered, humble, persistent, chutzpahdik, and in every way a very human hero. At the start of the climactic section of this week's portion, Moses is herding sheep in the wilderness when he comes upon a famous bush, Hasneh bo'er ba'esh v'hasneh einenu ukal, a bush burning with furious flame, but unconsumed. God appears to Moses out of the flame and instructs him to stand up for his people, go back to the Egypt he fled as a fugitive, liberate the enslaved Israelites. To put it mildly, though, Moses is reluctant. He argues he's not worthy. He says no one will believe him. He tells God, he stutters. He comes up with a variety of reasons he shouldn't have to go back to Egypt. When God answers each of his objections with a solution, Moses simply refuses to go. God, however, has a certain power to persuade. And of course, this being the Torah, our primary religious text, God is right. By the end of the portion, Moses finds himself back in Egypt, his first efforts to liberate the people rebuffed, he himself already discredited in his quest to free his people from domination. The growth of Moses into the protean liberation figure who redeems the Israelites will take two more weekly portions, but the lesson here in Shmot is that if God chooses a course for you, no matter what your personal feelings, you should probably go along for the ride. For one way or another, your direction in life has been selected. Or perhaps the lesson might be even greater. Many times our reluctance to accept a sacred task, to do what we are urged to do, is simply a combination of obstinacy and fear. We know we should take a new course in life, embrace hope and promise over the familiar and ordinary failures, but our own inertia holds us back. May the burning bush illumine a new sacred path for us in this new coming year of 2019, as it did for Moses so long ago. One final personal note. 4 years ago, I stood at the foot of Mount Sinai and saw what the monks of St. Catherine's Monastery say is the very bush Moses saw burning but not consumed 3,250-some years ago. While the identification of this shrub seems exceedingly dubious, and even the location of Mount Sinai itself is in some doubt, The continued power of the tale teaches us that the meaning of a narrative is often more powerful than the simple facts. Similarly, our own narratives, our life stories, like our own Torah portions, can have deep meaning, whether or not we turn out to be like Moses. Every human story has its own richness, beauty, and power. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Avi Haddad, principal of an excellent school that exists under the rain of missiles fired from Gaza, will describe that experience and the similarities and differences in Jewish education and Jewish identity between Israel and America, all when we come back in a moment here on To Jewish.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
In a surprising decision, the Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion has appointed Andrew Riefeld, a political science professor who has led the Jewish Federation of St. Louis since 2012, to serve as the 13th president of the College Institute. Riefeld will be the first president in the 143-year history of HUC, America's historic rabbinical seminary, who is not a rabbi. Last week, the Reform Movement's flagship seminary said Riefeld would lead its four campuses in New York, Jerusalem, Cincinnati, and Los Angeles starting April 1, 2019. Riefeld succeeds Rabbi Aaron Pankin of blessed memory, who died in a private plane crash in May of 2018 at the age of 53. Rabbi David Ellenson, who led HUCJIR from 2001 to 2013, has been serving as interim president again following Pankin's death. With more than a million members, the Reform Movement is the largest Jewish denomination in North America. Riefeld, 52 years old, has been an associate professor of political science at WashU in St. Louis since 2001, where he researches contemporary democratic theory and political theory, including how it relates to Jewish studies. He has been on official leave from the position since 2012, when he took the position of the St. Louis Federation. Continued to do research and teach courses on Jewish political thought and Zionism at Washington University. At the St. Louis Federation, Riefeld has overseen the creation of a pluralistic adult Jewish education center, raised money to renovate the city's Holocaust Museum, and worked on community security. Rabbi David Stern, president of the CCAR and a member of the search committee that picked Riefeld, called him an unconventional choice for our beloved College Institute and precisely the right one. His intellectual creativity is manifest in both his impressive academic achievements and the strategic agility with which he has led other programs and institutions, said Stern. Riefeld grew up in the Reform Movement. He attended the URJ's, well, it was then the UAHC's, I'm sure, Kutz Camp, and participated in the Nifty Youth Group at Baltimore Hebrew Congregation. After graduating from the University of Rochester in 1989 with a degree in philosophy, he served as regional director of the Reform Youth Movement in New Jersey. Riefeld also spent a year working with the Jewish community in Mumbai, India, as part of the American Jewish Joint Distribution Committee's Service Corps program. He received a master's in public policy and a doctorate in political science from the University of Chicago. Still, an interesting and likely controversial choice for HUCJIR in that Riefeld does not hold rabbinic ordination. Last week, U.S. President Donald Trump launched a full and accelerated pullout of the 2,000 U.S. troops in Syria, a move that might leave a vacuum Iran would no doubt be eager to fill. This will be seen in the region as diminishing the U.S. role in setting terms for an end to the Syrian civil war that has engulfed the country since 2011. Trump confirmed reports of a pullout by Twitter. "We have defeated ISIS in Syria, my only reason for being there during the Trump presidency," he said, referring to the near ouster of forces belonging to the ISIS Islamic State terrorist movement, which comprised part of the resistance to the brutal Assad regime. The White House later elaborated, "We have started returning U.S. troops home as we transition to the next phase of the campaign. The United States and our allies stand ready to re-engage at all levels to defend American interests wherever necessary. And we will continue to work together to deny radical Islamist terrorist territory, funding, support, and any means of infiltrating our borders." The Israeli government is somewhat rattled by the decision, at least that's what people are saying. Russian and Iranian advisors remain plentiful in Syria, as well as troops belonging to Hezbollah, the Lebanese terrorist militia allied with Iran. Iran, Hezbollah, and Russia are tied to the Assad regime. Turkey, which has also exercised influence in Syria, has backed the rebels. Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu says that any final status settlement to the war in Syria must include the removal of Iranian influence from Syria, and the removal of U.S. troops diminishes U.S. leverage to potentially achieve that outcome. We will see. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews round the world. We welcome back our guest this morning, Avi Haddad, who's the principal of the Harel School in Kiryat Malachi in the south of Israel. Delighted to have you here, in particular because of the perspective you bring. Your school, every school is unique, of course, and in Israel they really have somewhat different emphases in different elementary schools. Yours has emphasized excellence and character. Talk a little bit about that program.
Okay, the really point in my school, it's excellent around value. So we decide to teach this because we try to find something special, something that give the pupil something to proud, something that they can be more succeed. So we decide about excellent around value. The first program is science excellent. So we decide about 60 students from class 3 until class 6. They go to the Hebrew University one time in the month.
Which is, by the way, the top university in all of Israel.
Yes, she's the top. And they learn there about the body, about the heart, about the muscles, about the eyes, about the hearing. And all what they learn there, they make a presentation and teach in class 1 in the kindergarten and class 2. And the second project also to Hebrew University is Science Together. Science Together is a project that class 6 learn by self about the astronomy, about the ground and another subject, and they teach class 3. One,
so the sixth graders teach the third graders.
One by one. One by one they teach them. And the third project, it's together reading. What's the meaning? This also project of the Hebrew University. We take class 5, teach to read the Hebrew, class 2. Mm-hmm. So what we have here? We have young leadership in my school. So we take the pupil and make them a leadership.
It's great. Now that's part of a process, not only of giving kids access to things like robotics,
yeah,
and scientific excellence,
yes,
but really trying to develop personal character,
yeah,
in the school environment. You have a reward system that involves mitzvot, and tell us about that a little bit. It's one of my favorite parts of your school.
Yeah,
I think
we have place in the school, we call it Chanuta Mitzvot. The mitzvot shop.
The mitzvah store.
Yes, mitzvot store. What is the meaning? Me and my staff, we have meeting every Tuesday. The end of the day, we sit, you know, the staff that, you know, the best staff.
The top staff.
Yes,
right.
The top staff. We think, how we make the school more good. We have project, we have excellent around value, so we decide to open a store mitzvot. What is the meaning? If you done or do something good, you take tickets. you have a good behave, you get the tickets. If you have you do two good things, you get the tickets. So the tickets, it's 5 shekel, 10 shekel, and 3 shekel. And you collect as many you can and go to the mitzvot store and you can buy. You can buy a bicycle, you can buy a laptop, you can buy...
There must be a lot of mitzvot to buy
Yeah. So what happened here? You make him to be more good, more responsibility, more friend to the other pupil, and he get maybe bicycle, but he need to be very, very good, very good to get the bicycle, like example. But we have many, many, many things in the store that he can buy for 3 shekel, 10 shekel, yes.
So any good deed can be rewarded, which is not something the rest of the world does very well, I think. In the course of instituting excellence through value, excellence around value in your school, you constantly look to improve. Are there times when you have to kind of back up and start over when something isn't working? How do you approach that problem?
Look, when we have a problem, first of all, the slogan of my school, it's love and believe. Look, if you love the student, he believe you. And if you believe him, he love you. So this is the way, my way in the education and my staff. So most, let's say 99%, we have wonderful pupil. And the 1% that you have problem, we have counselor, we have a special teacher to help him to be a good, more good.
Your school, it's an elementary school, so it's kindergarten through sixth grade. Pretty similar in America. Sometimes it's kindergarten through fifth, and there's a middle school, but pretty much the same thing. It always seems to me that Israeli parents are a little different from American parents, even American Jewish parents.
Yeah.
In part because it's safer, really, to let your kids just go run around and hang out in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Missiles notwithstanding.
Yeah.
People aren't as paranoid. The other part is, I think that Israeli parents know that their kids are going in the military when they turn 18. And it changes the way that you raise a child, doesn't it?
Look, we have big difference between the mentality between the Israel and United States. In Israel, the boys, when they grown up, they go to the army. They can go to the neighborhood with no afraid. It's not happened here. You can send your children to the neighborhood in the night alone. Yes,
yeah.
In Israel, he can go to his friend to walk in the road with no scared. This is regular in Israel. Here, this is what I hear, that you have a problem here. Yes?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yes. You can send your now to, in this time, let's say let's say in the evening, 5 or 6 in the evening, to send your son to his friend, he walk alone. No. In Israel, you can do it.
Right.
When they grown up, they go to the army. So the army, they're alone with no family, with no nothing. So he gonna be strong more. This part of the life in Israel.
When so kids in elementary school usually stay through the whole time. Right?
Yeah.
You get them at kindergarten and they graduate. Do you call it graduation? What do you call it after sixth grade? What do they do?
Sixth grade, they go to the high school.
Is there a tekis of some kind?
Yes, yeah. Of course.
I mean a ceremony.
The end of the year, class 6, have a graduate with the parents.
Right.
They cry a lot of, yes.
Now they're all grown up. They're going to high school.
Look, they 7 years in the same place from kindergarten, class 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The end of the graduate for the party, the final party, they cry because they leave home. My school, it's not school. My school is home. They're really home. If you think the pupil stay in the school more than he stay in his home.
Sure.
He come to the school 7:45. He stay at the school until 3 o'clock in the evening.
Afternoon. Right.
So when if he go home, he go to his friend, he go to the neighbor, he play out the, so he go home, take a shower, eat and go and sleep.
Yeah.
So most his life in the school.
Sure.
So we must to give him feel that he the really home.
All right, so I have a question for you, because in America it's pretty common that elementary school children, not kindergarten necessarily, but pretty early on, they have homework. Right? Everybody has supposed to do homework every day. My kids, I always check, make sure they did their homework. Tell us the approach to homework that you take. It's different.
Look, I against homework. No, I tell you why.
I wish I'd had you as my principal.
Yes, okay. I tell you why. All the day, 7 hours in the day, 8 hours in the day, they learn. They have a lot of, they practice English, mathematics, science, sports. So full day they in the school. So why they need to go home and make a homework? So we know who do the homework, the parents, of not course. The children. So
of course I didn't do my kids' homework. I just got to say, okay, just a full
okay,
disclosure.
But you need to sit with them.
Yep.
You need to make sure that they done the homework, because now, if they don't know, you get phone call from the teacher.
Correct.
Hey, Mr. Right. Cohen, come to see what we have a problem. So
right.
Me and my staff decide to not give homework more. And look, but we give them, let's say, if we learn about Moshe Rabbeinu,
Moses, right.
We give them to make a presentation about Moses.
Moses, yeah.
Yes. Moshe Rabbeinu. If we learn about Yeshua Ben Nun,
right. Joshua,
yes, they make a presentation. You know, if you give him to make a presentation, so he sit in front of a laptop, and he makes something that he can use it from the class. You open his mind. You give him to be more responsibility and not more homework. And they give him question. They do it and done it in the class until the end of the day. And when the day is end, no more homework. And they succeed.
I can see why you're a very popular principal. I want to thank Avi Haddad for a great visit here. It's really too short on Too Jewish, the principal of the Harel School. And wish you a wonderful Nesiyah Tova back to Israel.
One more thing. I want to say thank you very much for our welcomes, me and the other delegation from Israel. I think that it's very important to continue the project and develop the project, the twins schools. It's very, very important to my school, to my children, to contact with the Jewish
children.
Yes.
They actually Skype back and forth.
Help them, first of all, help them with the English.
Yes.
This good connection between the Israeli and the Jewish American.
Right.
And I hope so that we developed this project and double. If we have now two groups,
right.
I want next year will be 5 groups.
It'll keep growing.
Yes, keep going. It's very important to me as a manager. I think this, I'm more proud and I think that it's very important to me and to my pupil, and I'm sure that they also for the Jewish here in America to develop this project. And I want
fantastic.
To say thank you oh. to Amir.
Amir Eden, who's our regular contributor
yes,
from the
Amir,
White Tribe Israel
Amir
Center
is
here,
wonderful.
Our maven on Israel.
He take care about us he, from the JCC.
Yes,
yes.
That's correct.
He take care about us. He
Federation.
Thanks for having us here. Thank you to Adi. She's also do for us.
You're very
done
welcome.
For us. Wonderful. And also Adi from Israel. She take care about us. And I must to say that I have wonderful time here. I meet wonderful people. They all the time around us and make us happy. And thank you, Mr. Cohen, Rabbi Cohen. I think that I this good chance to me to meet wonderful person. And you are very, very interesting man. And thank you for your welcome us. And welcome me to your home. You open your home to me. You open your heart. And I wish when you come to Israel, also you come to my home.
We have a deal. And I have to have a place to stay. And you
yeah.
you cooked for us here for my son Boaz and me.
Good.
And I have to say, fantastic food. The best food you can get in Arizona. And you, so you have to cook for me in Israel too.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when you come, my wife cooked to you. She's the best.
Even better.
All
yeah,
right. Even better. Oh, wow. Even better, yes.
Thanks so much, Avi. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here this morning here on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Cohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest on Too Jewish will be Jane S. Gaben, author of a good new novel on the Paris experience during World War II and beyond. It's called The Paris Photo. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TooJewishRadio.com website. Our playout this morning is a slightly ridiculous take on a Jewish parody of Christmas music, Mariah Carey's ever-popular tune. It's called All I Want for Christmas is Jews. As you eat your Chinese food on Monday night and watch a movie, feel free to find this cut on YouTube and enjoy it. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week we pray of peace.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just one thing I need. I don't care about the presents underneath the Christmas tree. I just want you for my own, more than you could ever know. Make my wish come true. All I want for Christmas is Jews. That's not the best behavior. That's okay, he rolled again.
sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.